Welcome back to the Running Wine Mom podcast. I'm your host, Samantha Selinsky, aka the Running Wine Mom. Today, we have a special guest joining us, the talented and prolific author, Sally Hepworth. Sally is the New York Times bestselling author of 9 novels, with her latest release being Darling Girls, a gripping psychological thriller that keeps readers on the edge of their seats. Beyond her literary achievements, Sally's journey to becoming a bestselling author is as inspiring as her novels. From her humble beginnings in event management and human resources to pursuing her lifelong dream of writing while on maternity leave, Sally's dedication to her craft shines through in every page she pens. In this episode, we'll delve into Sally's personal life, exploring the influence behind her storytelling, from her deep connections with family to the rituals that fuel her creativity. We'll uncover the woman behind the words. We'll also dive into Sally's journey as an author, discussing the challenges and rewards of creating compelling narratives that resonate with readers worldwide. And of course, we'll explore Sally's latest novel, Darling Girls, with its exploration of sisterhood, secrets, and suspense. We'll unravel the mysteries behind the pages and discover the inspiration behind the gripping tale. So without further ado, let's welcome Sally. Welcome, Sally.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so thrilled to be here.
I am so excited. And I've read, I think this is my 4th book that I finished of yours, maybe 5th. I'm not sure. Aww. But I love you as an author. So I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you.
So to start each episode, we have our wine, and Wit of the Week segment. This is where we share our favorite bottle of wine, vent about something that is bothering us, and celebrate our recent victories. So grab a glass, take a deep breath, and let's get started. So Sally, what is your WINE of the week?
Well, I have actually, since it's 10:30 in the morning in Australia, I am on the water, but I did have a glass of wine last night, a very nice, it's called Shaw and Smith Pinot Grigio, which was lovely. And, you know, I ended up having a few glasses because I couldn't stop.
Love it. And what is your WHINE of the week?
Oh, but it's hard to narrow that down, but I was just having a good old whine about the fact that the laundry never ends.
It really doesn't.
And just desperately trying to share tips on how to get through it. It's a really basic one, but I feel like everyone can agree when you just look at that laundry pile and think, what are you still doing there? I just did laundry last week.
You know? Yeah. And I saw you have the laundry gate with your, I saw that and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, it really does. In February, my family had to go ahead of me on vacation because I had to go to work. So I had like a weekend to get every single piece of laundry done and it took forever. But then we came back and there it is again. I'm like, it doesn't, it just never stops. So what are we doing about this?
I'm desperately seeking a solution, but apparently not.
If you find one, send it my way, please.
I will. I absolutely will.
So what is your win of the week?
I think probably the fact that I am packing for my US book tour, and I always notoriously find packing very difficult, and I can never kind of figure out what needs to come and what doesn't and how to fit it all in. But I have really, I went early, which is a really good idea. And I have got my bag more or less packed. Like it's always the last few things that are a challenge, but I think I'm like 90% there, which is very good for me.
Congratulations. And I always like to ask my guests, what is one struggle that you've overcome leading to where you are now? And what is one thing that you are most proud of in your life?
One struggle that I have overcome is probably, and this is one of the just benefits of being in your 40s, is just learning to be yourself and be honest about, you know, if you don't know something, if you've stuffed something up. This morning, for those of you who are listening, I got the time completely wrong for this podcast. And I did that for another one last night. The time difference is just completely does my head in. And it's so nice to be able to just go, I'm so sorry. This is completely my fault. And people are so understanding when you do that because everyone knows what it's like. And so I think that that struggle of feeling like, I mean, I still feel like I want to be on top of everything, of course, but letting go of that kind of self-flagellation if you do stuff something up, because generally people are really understanding. So that's, yeah, I would say that's probably a struggle that I have, or I'm continuing to overcome. What was the other one?
What is one thing you are most proud of in life?
Probably my friendships with my girlfriends. I've had a really tight group of girlfriends for most of my life, since when I was a child. And just more and more over the years, I've realized that they are the ones that I turn to and who hold me when I need it. And, you know, someone said to me recently, it's so lovely that you have all of these warriors, you know, supporting you. And I said, yes, I'm so lucky. And then they said, but you have also been in the army, you know, you've also been a warrior for them. And it's true, like you do, these friendships that come over generations are so, you know, embedded and it's so the creation of so much history and support and love. And I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, and a lot of people really don't have that. I'm like you. I have a strong group of female friends from childhood as well. And to see each other go through all different phases of life from, you know, you can remember them in second grade and to see them now you're with kids and to grow together. But so to understand each other's worries is so important. And so that's an awesome thing to have in life. Yeah. So the Running Wine Mom, we start off with a little fitness. So what is your favorite way to stay active?
So my latest fairly new active habit is swimming. I actually live right near the beach, and I used to be the kind of person that got cold in the water and didn't want to get in. But now I swim in the ocean every day, even in the winter. And I just find it so restorative. Like, as well as being exercise, there's something about getting in that salt water that just feels like it's good for me and it's doing me good. So that I just love that. And on top of that, I do a bit of walking and I do a bit of yoga. So they're all fairly gentle exercises. I'm not a big, you know, jumping around wild sports kind of person, but I just love to move my body and stretch and, you know, just keep things moving. So yeah, they're the things I do.
That's awesome. The ocean water is always, the salt water is good for the soul. It is just such a healer of all. How do you stay motivated to maintain your fitness routine?
Well, I think it's become easier since it's been about my mental health as opposed to, and my physical health. But as opposed to what I look like, I think, you know, earlier in my life, exercise was something that you did to try and, look a certain way or fit into certain clothes. Whereas now when you're 43 years old and it's about mental health, it's about, you know, things like if I don't exercise, I get a sore back and a sore knee.
So true.
And so it's a self-motivation in that, like, if you don't do it, it causes you pain. So that keeps me on track.
Oh, that's awesome. So let's move on to parenthood. So can you tell us about your family?
Yes, I'm a single mum. I've got three children, 15-year-old son, 12-year-old daughter, and a 7-year-old daughter. And we're a tight knit. We've got a dog as well. And they're great. They're the loves of my life.
Awesome. And what were you least prepared for in parenthood?
Oh, gosh, I wasn't prepared for anything. I remember, and I think a lot of new mums say this, but the moment they let you take your baby home from hospital and you just think, but I'm not qualified to look after this child. Like this.
Yeah.
And I often still feel like that when they come to me with a problem and I think I look around for the person who's going to know and I realize, oh, that's me.
Supposed to be me.
but I equally think that one of the beautiful things about becoming a parent is how much you turn to your instincts and how natural sometimes parenting feels. Like you're a natural instinct to protect your child or to, you know, to worry or to, you know, to keep them safe. It's so primal. And I think that's probably why they let you take your babies home.
Yes, it is still the craziest thing to me that they just give you a child.
Like, yeah, okay. I know. It's
what do you think your parenting style is?
I'm a pretty relaxed mum. I'm not a super strict parent. Maybe to my detriment, I don't know. My kids are really great kids, and I haven't found that I'm a super big disciplinarian. I guess I probably try to understand how they're feeling. I really remember what it was like being a child, and I remember how difficult it is to be a child. And so I always try and lean into that and try and kind of figure out what's going on more than, you know, laying down the rules. And that works for my kids. I don't know that, you know, it's necessarily, I don't advocate a certain way to parent, but I think we do need to trust our instincts on what's best for our kids.
And what is one piece of advice you would give other parents?
Oh, I don't know if I'm in a position to give advice to any parent. but one thing I heard someone else say once that I always thought of is this parent said, when my child is upset, when something's happened, I always hug them first and ask questions later.
That's good advice.
Yeah, and I do that, and I thought about that a lot, and I don't think it can really steer you wrong. I think if they've done something still, like a hug, they're upset, they're a child, and you can give them a hug and reassure them that it's going to be okay. And then, you know, sometimes they have to be disciplined, but I think no child has really gone off the rails because they were hugged too much.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's great advice. So let's get a little bit into you and your journey into becoming an author. So I read that you kind of pursued your dream of becoming an author while on maternity leave with your first child. And actually, funny enough, because I read it must have been in a blog or an article that you wrote, and you were talking about how, like, you know, thinking I had all this time to write. And I realized, like, so I wrote a journal prompt book with my first daughter, with my daughter, my only daughter, on maternity leave. And I was like, I really connected with that, because you're like, you feel like you have no time, but then, like, when they're napping, you're like, I might have 10 minutes. I might have 2 hours. Yeah. What can I do with this time? So that's where I was like, oh, let me kind of, because I teach as well, use some of the stuff with teaching. And anyway, long story short, I would love to hear what your thought process behind it, because I am not nearly as a successful writer as you are.
Well, I mean, it was exactly as you said. It was that I thought this is a good, I mean, yes, it's true that babies take up a lot of time. And I have had a few people say to me, I can't believe you wrote a novel when you had, you know, I couldn't even write a shopping list when I had a baby. And to that, I say two things. One is that I had a very good sleeper. My first baby, I called him my robot baby, because he would sleep for 3 hours every afternoon, and I could bank on that. And that gave me some really good time to write. And the other thing is that I did really let everything else go to hell. You know, like I wasn't really doing the laundry or you know, the other things. Everything, the house was in chaos, but I was writing a book. And I think what it really provided for me, even more than just that time while my son was napping, was going on maternity leave. It's a kind of stopgap in your life that makes you pause and think about, what am I doing that I enjoy? What am I not doing? What would I like to do? And I think that's the reason that a lot of women I speak to will write or create a business or whatever it is that they're doing during that period, because it makes them take stock of where they're at and what they want for the next little period. So for me, that was the start of it.
Well, that's amazing. So also, family obviously plays a significant role in your life, both personally and in your novels. So how do you use your real life experience with family influence to kind of the family dynamics you create in your stories?
I don't really take anything across the board, like, from real life and put it in a story. You know, I create fictional characters and fictional situations always. That said, it's impossible for a part of yourself to not leak through onto the page. And so in that way, every understanding that I have come to about mothers-in-law or sisters or familial relationships do find their way onto the page. Every kind of interaction that I've had that I figured out was a misunderstanding, or you know, all of that stuff that allows us to understand human beings is integral to writing the books. That's why I think it's hard to write a book until you have had a bit of life experience and you understand how relationships work and the nuance of it and the, you know, the multiple perspectives. So, yeah, I suppose that's probably the way that my real life relationships influence the books.
And what about any writing rituals or habits that help you kind of during the creative process? Do you write? I always like to ask the authors that I interview, do you write the beginning and ending first and then fill the middle in? Or do you kind of do an outline and then write as you go?
No, I thought of doing the beginning and the ending first. But there's usually too many threads that I can't quite get there. I write in sequential order, generally from beginning to end. Sometimes I'll jump ahead if I know that there's a scene that I'm sort of itching to write. I might do that and fill in the gaps later. So that will be my process. Rituals in an ideal world, I will be in a quiet house with, you know, maybe a candle burning and the coffee and, you know, and that's ideal, you know, conditions. But much more often I find myself, you know, watching a football game while my kids are playing or, you know, in the car or on my couch because, you know, someone else is at my desk and it's just, you know, the world is messy and often I can't get my perfect conditions and that's okay. I write every day when I'm writing a new novel because I have to kind of keep that momentum going or I lose it. But where it can happen is pretty, there's plenty of options and yeah, it could be anywhere.
That's awesome. So you've sold over 1 million books worldwide. What has been the most rewarding aspect of your journey as an author so far?
I think what has happened over time that's been really nice is I remember in the early days of writing and someone would ask what I do and I would say I write novels and they'd say, would I have heard of anything you've written? And I would always kind of cringe because I'd think probably not, you know, and this is going to be an awkward conversation. But one of the nice things, I guess, that's been quite rewarding 9 books on is now more often than not, I will say I write novels and I'm pretty sure they will have read one of my books, you know, and usually they have. Or if they haven't read one, they've heard of them or they saw their friend with it. And that's hugely rewarding. What a dream to be kind of well-known enough to feel that confidence. So, yeah, that I think that would be it probably.
Yeah. And then even so The Mother-in-Law is possibly being adapted to TV with Amy Poehler, right? Yep. So how does that feel? about that or?
Well, at this point, almost all of my books have been optioned, I think. Apart from the first couple, which is amazing and so exciting. The Mother-in-Law, of course, yeah, as you said, with Amy Poehler, incredibly exciting. And I was able to meet her as well, which was which was so special. And they're all in different stages of development at this point. So I don't really know which one will come first, but I've been, you know, thrilled to read a couple of scripts and to have a few early meetings with producers. So fingers crossed, I think I'm hopeful that at least one of them will be made in, you know, the coming years. So
that'll be so awesome.
Watch this space. Yeah.
Yes. So let's get into Darling Girls. It comes out April 23rd, which is when this podcast is going to be aired. It explores the intricate bond between foster sisters amidst the backdrop of secrets and suspense. So what inspired you to create this particular story?
Well, I write about family relationships. And so it really was, foster care was something that kept coming up. You know, I've written about a lot of biological relationships, mothers-in-law and, you know, sisters and all of the things. But foster care was interesting because it's not really a familial relationship in its truest sense. In the book, these three sisters, as it were, don't have any biological connection. They were just raised in foster care together and they chose to call themselves sisters. And, you know, many years later, once they've left the foster home, they continue to call each other sisters and live like sisters. So that was something I thought was going to be really interesting to cover in a book. And the actual story, I guess, was prompted by two things. One was a friend of a friend who was fostering children, who I'd taken an interest in it because I've always been interested in foster care. And our mutual friend used to tell me things about how it was going. And one day she told me that this woman was fostering two little boys and they had started to call each other brothers and they would tell people they were brothers. And I thought, like, that it's so understandable when you think about it, that they've been taken away from their homes and their, you know, families, whatever they were, their things. And so of course they're going to try and create these connections with people. And I thought that's something I can kind of explore in a book, why we do that and how that works. And then the other part, which for those who haven't read the book, this is a kind of through line of the book, is I read a newspaper article about a little girl who went missing from foster care when she was 3 years old and who 20 years later saw herself on a missing persons TV show, said, "I think that looks like me," did a DNA test. It was in fact her. And that kind of came together with, oh, am I going to write about foster care? I see what the plot could be. By the way, if you're listening, it's not exactly that what happened. I haven't just spoiled the book, but that was a little kind of it was a little seed that prompted me to put together the plot of this book.
Yeah, and that's when I was reading it. Actually, have you ever heard of the book Before We Were Yours?
Lisa Wingate, kind of, I think.
Yes, that made me some things in that kind of made me think of, you know, back to that, even though they're totally different books, but I read that last summer and it just really stuck with me. And I was thinking, you know, kind of back to that and kind of brought back thoughts of that book. But anyway, so in the book, the girls, you know, they have to confront their past, which is very traumatic when a body is discovered under the childhood home. What challenges did you face when portraying such sensitive themes? Because there were a lot through the book. How did you kind of go about that?
Look, it was pretty instinctual what I said and didn't say. I did speak to a number of women who grew up in foster care in order to prepare for the book, and they really gave me a good sense of what could happen, of course, and they really ran the gamut from, you know, very good experiences to very, very bad experiences. And so I wanted to demonstrate something that was plausible, realistic, but also I didn't want to kind of trot out every possible thing that could happen either. Like, I kind of had to choose I had to think, who is this foster mother and how does she rule this house? And so I really did just follow my instincts, and I wanted to do justice to this particular story. So it does go into some stuff that's a bit confronting. I also didn't want it to be that kind of, you know, shock trauma that you just keep throwing terrible thing after terrible thing. So
right.
I think that comes from the gut. You know, you just know as the author, this should stay in, this should come out. And that's what I did.
Yeah, and it did do a good job of, there was, you know, some hard parts to read, and then it would kind of go to something where, you know, it was very well sprinkled through, I guess. I guess that would be the word for it.
Well, you've got to balance the light and the shade, I think.
Yes.
And there were some moments that were quite dark, and then, yeah, had to balance it with a bit of levity without taking away from the seriousness. So, that was probably my challenge, I would say.
The other thing about this novel is that it incorporates perspectives from multiple characters and multiple timelines, which can sound confusing. It was not confusing for me, I will say that. It was very easy to follow. But how did you kind of approach that, weaving things together through different narrative threads to create a cohesive story?
As you say, there were two timelines, and there were the flashbacks to where the girls were living in the foster home, And then there was the current day story. I also did go, I alternated between the three, the perspectives of the three women. And so there were parts of that that were, you know, I had to think of who's revealing what and who knows what. And but in a sense, because all three women were on the page in most, you know, even in each other's stories, it made it quite straightforward to tell the story that way. And I felt like that was the way that the story was supposed to be told. So I didn't have any great challenges with it. I've done some more trickier timelines that have really got me in trouble, but this one, I think it worked for the story, so it wasn't too difficult.
No, that's okay. So Miss Fairchild is their foster mother, and the three foster sisters, there's connections between their childhood and adulthood with how they're acting. How did you develop the complexity of them and figure out, for example, with Jessica, her cleaning, or, you know, very pristine focus? How did you kind of pick those for each girl?
Look, I didn't really pick them. It was, I kind of created the book, and at the beginning, they're almost like cardboard cutouts, like talking heads, you know, and you kind of, well, this is who this person is. And one of the great things that taking you into the back story does as the author is that you are able to figure out the why, you know, like I knew who Jessica was in the current day, but when I then went back, I thought, oh, well, this is why she's like that. You know, these stories allowed me to dig deep, and it allowed me to figure out what needed to be on the page, you know, and often it was just really exploring what made the girls the way that they were. So, I find that more and more, the more books that I write, I can follow my instincts a little bit and not have to be too, I don't have to manufacture anything too much. I just trust the story.
So without giving away any spoilers, what was the most surprising or challenging aspect of writing Darling Girls for you?
Oh, I think it was probably not so much the writing, but definitely speaking to the women who had been through foster care. And in some cases, they were pretty traumatic stories. And I find that much more difficult to deal with than writing my stories, because while the women are very real to me, it didn't actually happen. Whereas as I'm speaking to the women, their stories happened to them. And that I find really difficult to turn away from. And also it made me very determined to tell a story that would, you know, would be fair to them and that would do all of these experiences justice. So that would be the most challenging, I think, speaking to the women.
So you have given us so much information into your background in writing, all the success of your writing, and now your newest Darling Girls, which, like I said, I just finished and I loved it so much. But what do you hope the readers will take away from Darling Girls and your body of work as a whole?
I hope that two things. I mean, of Darling Girls specifically, one of the most beautiful things that's come out of that book has been, because it was released in Australia 6 months ago, so I've already had some feedback. And I've heard from probably a dozen people who have decided to train to become foster parents, having read the book, which was so powerful and so beyond kind of what I had imagined for this book. You know, if I like to write a book to entertain and to draw people in and to, you know, to show them empathetic views and that everyone has their own story. But I think that fiction is so powerful in that it can allow people to, you know, see into these worlds and maybe make a change to their own world. And then, you know, if it's becoming a foster parent, well, then that also can make a change to someone else's world.
Yes, it's so true. You're so right. That's awesome. And I don't know if you had that thought when you wrote it, that you thought, did you think that people would want to become foster parents when you were writing
them? No, I didn't. And I always keep my focus on, you know, I don't want it to become too, I want to change the world with my fiction, because I think that I don't want it to be heavy handed. I want the story to be the story. And in a way, as the author, you can't control what comes from that. But I'm so thrilled when I, you know, hear that good things have come from it.
That's amazing. Well, that's awesome. All right. So that's going to bring us to the end of another episode of The Running Wine Mom. As we near the end of our conversation with Sally Hepworth, I'm feeling inspired by her journey as both a writer and a woman. From her heartfelt reflection on family and love to her insights into the art of storytelling, Sally has shared invaluable wisdom that will linger long after this episode. As we bid farewell, I can't help but feel a sense of anticipation for what lies ahead. With Darling Girls captivating readers around the world and Sally's unwavering commitment to her craft, it's clear that her literary journey is far from over. So to all of our listeners, I encourage you to pick up your copy of Darling Girls, which will air today, April 23rd, and immerse yourself into the thrilling world crafted by Sally. And while you're at it, explore her extensive catalog of novels, each one a testament to her talent and passion for storytelling. And as always, if you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing it. You can also follow me on Instagram at @therunningwinemom_. And Sally, where can the listeners find you?
They can find me on Instagram at Sally Hepworth, and on my website, which is sallyhepworthauthor.com. I'm also on Facebook, but I'm probably most prolific on Instagram.
Awesome. And I will link all that. Thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it. Yes. So thank you so much for joining me today. Remember, you are strong, you are capable, and you are all amazing. Until next time, keep running, keep sipping, keep reading, and keep embracing the joy of motherhood. Cheers. And I will be back next Tuesday.